Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 13th, 2021. Burn ban in effect. No ground fires by order of Presidio County. Marfa and Alpine ISDs to offer vaccine to students in the coming days. Marfa. Marfa ISD will hold a vaccine clinic for students at 1 p.m. Friday, May 14th in the MISD boardroom, with the second dose being offered on May 4th. The Department of State Health Services will administer vaccines to students ages 12 and older. There is no charge for the vaccine. Alpine ISD, also in conjunction with DSHS, will host its vaccine clinic on Tuesday, May 18th, with a second dose on June 17th. According to a DSHS spokesperson, young people have been less likely to suffer severe illness when infected with COVID, but they have been as susceptible as other age groups to infection and are able to spread the illness to others, even if asymptomatic. Beyond spreading the illness, more unvaccinated individuals can lead to more opportunities for the virus to mutate as it spreads. One benefit in having more younger Texans get the vaccine is it could help stop the emergence and spread of new variants. The virus needs a host before it can mutate and possibly become a more dangerous variant, and more immunity through vaccination will help to limit that possibility, the DSHS spokesperson said. Previously, the Tri-County region had a difficult time accessing the Pfizer vaccine as compared to other COVID-19 vaccines because the area lacks proper cold storage options to keep the drug on hand. But earlier this month, DSHS told Marfa ISD that the Pfizer vaccine, currently the only one authorized for use in children aged 12 to 17, will be available for the school. We've been working on setting up a vaccine clinic just because Presidio County itself has been so ahead of the state in making sure everyone who wanted the vaccine could get it. So we started saying, okay, let's do that, said Marfa Independent School District Superintendent Oscar Aguero. We wanted our seniors to get vaccinated because they're heading to college soon, he said. Their parents will have that sense of comfort no matter where they're going. In Marfa, medical consent forms were sent home with students on Wednesday, May 12th, and children 12 to 15 years old must be accompanied by their parent, guardian, at the clinic in order to be vaccinated. Parents who want their child vaccinated can also call the school at 432-729-5500. Over in Alpine, those interested in having their child vaccinated must contact the district nurse, Gail Owen, at 432-837-7730. By Friday, May 14th. Consent forms can be downloaded and printed at rmd.me/YDLC V0K. All required documents are needed on site the day of the vaccine. Photo by Maisie Crow. Marfa ISD students, left to right, Francisco Rosas Eva Flores, Amber Hinojos, Leslie Torres, and John Aguero performed Ballet Folklorico during a Cinco de Mayo and Mother's Day celebration in front of the Presidio County Courthouse on Monday. Growing Ballet Folklorico Club teaches culture, history, and community connection. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. Mexican folk dancing took center stage Monday evening in Marfa, where students from Marfa schools danced Ballet Folklorico in the streets in front of the county courthouse in celebration of Cinco de Mayo and Mother's Day. Friends, family, and neighbors of the students brought out their camp chairs and set up in the middle of Highland Avenue as students danced and sang. The young women twirled their brightly colored skirts and the young men danced along in step. The performance was the culmination of the Ballet Folklorico Club's fifth year, and despite challenges of remote learning, the club is bigger than ever. The group is led by teacher and coach Arturo Alferez, who brought the program to Marfa after having taught it at Sul Ross State University and Presidio ISD. When I came to Marfa, I got to see the school district and some of the student programs that were available, and at the time, the only thing we had was band and art, but we didn't have anything on the dance side. He asked Superintendent Oscar Aguero if he could put together a student organization for the dance style, believing it would fit well in Marfa and help connect the school with the broader Marfa community. The evening of choreographed dances on Monday included girls and boys ensembles and even a few swords being swung when a trio of boys took the stage to dance. With kids tied to their phones and tuned into the latest in pop culture, Alferez tries to help students see that Ballet Folklorico was once popular in the culture of another era. To him, it is important to me to teach the culture behind it. It's a very cultural connection, but it's not just that, Alferez said. When we dance a song, there's always history behind the song, behind certain steps and movement. There's history why the girls' dresses are long and the boys dress in their gala outfits. The coach is also the U.S. and Texas history teacher, and with each dance, he tries to infuse the lessons with a deeper understanding of its history. Along with the dancing on Monday, Leslie Torres and Umi Shanez sang a duet, and Shanez gave two solo performances. I was nervous, and then the fact that the mic cut off in the middle of it, I was scared, Shanez said after the performance, where a technical hiccup momentarily stalled her song. Shanez handled the moment with grace, finishing the performance strong as the audience cheered her on. I tell my students, I want you to perform without worrying, Alferez said. There's a technical difficulty, but what brings a smile to me is after the performance, seeing their smiles, seeing how happy, how cheerful they are that they performed. Along with building the confidence in his students, he says it's about the community too. I hear stories that so many people were taking pictures and happy to see us, and that's what they're doing. They're spreading the joy through dance and music. Seeing that smile, parents hugging them, that's the end result I want to see. Shanez's mother, Elizabeth Gutierrez, had many smiles and hugs for Shanez after the performance. It's always great to see my baby singing, she beamed. Here with our community, it's so great. Between performances, Superintendent Aguero thanked the community for coming out and supporting another wonderful activity our students are able to participate in, as well as thanking Alferez for bringing a beautiful part of our culture. For the final dance, senior Gabby Soto joined in, and from the crowd, her mother, Sulema Reyes, and teacher's aide, Bridget Orr, cheered her on. On seeing her daughter dance this Monday, Reyes said she was proud and super emotional. Alferez's plans to use Folklorico to connect the community and school are continuing to grow. After Monday's performance, the coach said more students have asked to join the club. But it's not just teens who are eager to be dancing ballet Folklorico. Some Marfa parents who attended school in Mexico remember dancing Folklorico as part of their curriculum, the coach said, and have asked him to start a group for adults. I think that's going to be my next project, having an adults group to help us out with some of the performances of the kids, he said. It's all about making connections and bridging the gap between our school and our community. $1.25 million grant for Tonati Foundation will support restoration projects, job training for West Texas women. Marfa, the Tonati Foundation this week announced multiple new restoration initiatives that will focus on the Chamberlain Building, its exposed adobe walls, and the native grasslands that surround Tonati Foundation's property. Much of the restoration work will be completed with the help of a $1,250,000 grant from #StartSmall, which will also support a living wage of $15 an hour for Tonati interns and promote the recruitment and education of young Far West Texas women into adobe and land conservation practices. #StartSmall is a philanthropic initiative by Jack Dorsey, the CEO of the social media site Twitter. Last year, the CEO donated $1 billion of his wealth to fund global COVID-19 relief, girls' health and education, and efforts towards universal basic income. The grant awarded to Tonati Foundation will support priority projects identified in Tonati's 2017 master plan, with a focus on restoration projects and job training for local women. This week, Tonati announced a massive restoration project on the Chamberlain Building, the home of the Foundation's first ever exhibition, which opened in 1983. 1 year earlier, Donald Judd wrote, "Permanent installations and careful maintenance are crucial to the autonomy and integrity of art, to its defense, especially now when so many people want to use it for something else." With nearly 40 years of wear since, its restoration is now underway and is expected to finish in spring 2022. Alongside those fixes, the #StartSmall grant will be used to tackle a related project, the restoration of Judge's distinctive exposed adobe walls. The exposed adobe walls Judd put up on the northwest of the Chamberlain Building are notable for their use of adobe bricks and concrete mortar. Over the decades since their construction, those have deteriorated in the desert weather, and as Tonati works to restore them, they will also begin a concerted effort to bring in and train young Far West Texas women in the practice of adobe restoration, with a particular focus on developing specialized skills to restore Judd's unique use of adobe and concrete. The third restoration effort on the Foundation's slate is that of the grasslands and riparian corridor that border Tonati's grounds, along with preservation of the extensive plantings Judd established at Tonati. As envisioned by Judd, Tonati's environment was an integral context for the art and architecture sited on the grounds, while also providing an essential habitat for local and migrating wildlife. With support from #StartSmall, Janati's project to preserve and protect the land will become a hands-on initiative to train young women from the region in grassland conservation, range ecology, and land management. In addition to restoration projects, #StartSmall will be giving a boost to those who are early in their careers on the Janati grounds. Janati's internship program, which began in 1990, has long offered stipends and housing for those who arrive to learn and experience working in the art world. Now, with the help of the grant, Janati will provide interns a $15 hourly wage in addition to housing and full benefits. Particular outreach for interns will also focus on recruiting young women of color to the program who have historically been underrepresented in the field of arts administration. #StartSmall's grant is transformational support for our mission to preserve and present what Judd created at Janati, an institution integral to Marfa and Far West Texas, said Janati Director Jeannie Moore. It enables us to approach crucial restoration projects in a way that builds partnerships and opportunities, particularly for young women in our local Marfa and broader art communities. Border Patrol installs new surveillance towers in Big Bend region. By Sachi McClendon, SACHI at BigBendSentinel.com. Big Bend. Border Patrol deployed a new line of surveillance towers in the Big Bend sector within the last 3 weeks, according to the technology company Andural that developed them. Using radar systems in conjunction with high-powered cameras, Andural's AI-integrated tower is able to analyze exactly what is moving inside its multi-mile surveillance radius. Through a software known as Lattice, the 30-foot tower is able to determine if the moving object is, for example, a human, a bird, or even an incoming cruise missile. The system then alerts Border Patrol agents who can decide whether to further investigate the anomaly in the landscape. In January, President Biden introduced legislation to bring more technology to the U.S.-Mexico border. Biden's proposal, while light on specifics, authorizes the DHS secretary to develop and implement a strategy to manage and secure the southern border between ports of entry that focuses on flexible solutions and technologies that expand the ability to detect illicit activity. Andural, which is named after the sword wielded by one of the main characters in the Lord of the Rings franchise, thinks it's well positioned to take advantage of Biden's shift toward technology. We're excited to work with the administration to continue to scale these towers, said Matt Steckman, Andural's chief revenue officer. Steckman would not say exactly how many Sentry towers were currently in use in the area, but he did say that the company plans on having a large presence in the region soon, though. Border Patrol spokesperson Greg Davis said he didn't know the exact number of towers in the region, but estimated there were just under a dozen in operation at the moment. Unlike legacy surveillance equipment, Andural's towers run off of solar power and can be easily stationed in the remote areas of Big Bend. It's also much easier for Border Patrol to convince private landowners to allow the towers on their property, as there's no construction involved in setting up the surveillance equipment, Steckman said. According to Steckman, Jim White, who owns the Bright Ranch outside of Marfa, was the first private landowner to allow Andural to test its new towers. White would not comment on the towers. According to a federal government spending database, Andural has contracts totaling over $61 million with U.S. Customs and Border Protection, all for prefabricated tower structures and their attendant software systems. The Department of Homeland Security, the parent agency of Customs and Border Protection, listed the construction of these autonomous surveillance towers as one of its top funding priorities for the 2021 fiscal year. DHS said it wanted $28.0 million to construct 30 additional autonomous surveillance towers in its yearly budgeting brief. According to a press release from CBP, the agency has purchased 60 towers so far and plans on acquiring 140 more in the next couple of years. Andural's towers have been operating for just under 3 years in Eastern California. Steckman admitted that those crossing the border might be adapting to the tower's presence already. You'll see sort of a spike that'll sort of run for a few weeks, and then you'll see detections going down, he said, and you'll see traffic sort of squirting to the east and west of the systems. Davis acknowledged the same problem. The information gets back to the transnational criminal organizations south of the border, and they know, well, don't send people right here because there's a camera system, Davis said, adding, they're not permanent, though. We can move them. The benefit for Steckman is that agents don't have to manually monitor the cameras attached to the towers. We're trying to flip the current paradigm of people spending 80% of time looking at screens and trying to figure out what's going on in the environment and 20% doing active work, Steckman said. You can deploy them as much as you want, and you won't have to add staff. Jeffrey Hamis, who is the president of the Border Patrol Union for the Big Bend sector, said while he supports Andural's towers, he thinks the agency should strike a balance between funding new technology and hiring more personnel. We can't just rely on technology. We can't just rely on boots on the ground. You have to have a mixed approach, he said. The Big Bend sector especially has been understaffed, and we're dealing with levels of traffic that I've been here since 2009, I've never personally seen, Hamis said. Anything that can help us do our job, we're going to support that. Next generation 911 system in the works for Tri-County Region by Sachi McClendon. SACHI at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. On Tuesday, the tech company Carbine demonstrated its next-generation 911 emergency system to dispatchers in the Tri-County region. The new 911 software, called APEX, APEX, allows for callers to text and send live video to emergency response personnel in order to provide a more complete picture of where they are located. This presentation comes as the Tri-County region, through the Rio Grande Council of Governments, migrates away from its legacy 911 equipment to a more modern cloud-based dispatch service. Marissa Quintanilla, who oversees the region's dispatch service, said, the legacy equipment was based on the Southwestern Bell communication system, the old telephones. That's what we're still using today. The next gen 911 is moving away from the analog circuits and going to the digital circuits. Quintanilla set up the presentation with Carbine in order to hear if local dispatchers thought this new system would work in the remote Tri-County region, with its spotty connectivity and limited cellular coverage. One of the biggest features to the APEX system is the ability for callers to transmit video to dispatchers in order to further pin down the caller's location. In the presentation, Carbine Chief Architect Jason Willinan explained how the APEX system will automatically send a caller a text message that prompts the user to transmit real-time video to the dispatchers, much like a FaceTime call. For example, when there was the shooting in Alpine in 2016, if somebody was able to send you video as to where the shooter was, then you have better information to relay to that first responder, Quintanilla said. The APEX system also allows dispatchers to text with callers, add other personnel to the line, and view a caller's location on a program powered by Google Maps. One concern for dispatchers was whether the limited strength of the cell connection in the area would prevent callers from being able to transmit video. In response, Carbine customer manager Sean Barnes told the dispatchers, "You may not have enough bandwidth for video, but you may have enough there for location data." These new video features would only work on modern smartphones, not landlines or older cell phones. One dispatcher mentioned that in Hudspeth County, they receive a lot of calls from undocumented immigrants who just have a flip phone and wouldn't be able to take advantage of these next-generation features. Yet, Quintanilla hopes this new system will be able to help Border Patrol agents, who often act as emergency first responders, locate those crossing the border that are in need of help. "Going to the case where you have an undocumented immigrant lost in the desert," she said, "if we're able to get that video, we can dispatch first responders and we can say that they're right here. And first responders can see that multimedia information as well." One of the things it won't solve is when we have calls from Mexico, because we all get them, Quintanilla said. As the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, some emergency calls from residents in Mexico have been misrouted to dispatchers in the U.S. While the new APEX system wouldn't stop calls from being misrouted, it could allow dispatchers on both sides of the border to communicate with one another. According to Barnes, Carbine already works with most states in Mexico, including all of the border states. Even though the specific software Mexico uses is different, dispatchers could be able to transfer information through the APEX system. "We are currently meeting with CBP on some cross-border initiatives," Barnes said. Quintanilla will be in front of the Texas Commission on State Emergency Communications on May 19th to request the funds for this next-generation 911 system. The current cost hovers just around $500,000, according to Quintanilla. "I have quotes from two other vendors, proposals from two other vendors, but they don't provide the multimedia capability that I'm interested in," she said. "Right now, the vendor Carbine is the only one that I know that is delivering a multimedia approach." After the presentation came to close, Monica Sanchez, who runs the Presidio Dispatch office, said the area could really benefit from APEX's live video capabilities. "Sometimes these people don't know where they're at. Sometimes they tell us, 'We're by Chinati Peak,' but that could mean they're anywhere, really," she said. "But if we're physically able to see them, it would really help us out." District and County Clerk Virginia Payares to retire. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. Presidio County and District Clerk Virginia Virgie Payares, that's P-A-L-L-A-R-E-Z, this week announced her intention to retire from her elected role after over 15 years on the job. Payares will step down into retirement on June 2nd after over 30 years as a county employee. Payares first began working at Presidio County on March 25, 1991, in a part-time role. She would go on to work under three clerks, Ada Prieto, Ramona Lara, and Brenda Silva Bentley, before her own election to county and district clerk in 2006. Since the term ends in November 2022, the county is seeking applicants immediately to appoint someone to complete the year and a half of the remaining term. Applications are being accepted until May 25th at 5 p.m., which will be reviewed by the Commissioner's Court on May 26th. Commissioners will then appoint a new county and district clerk. The clerk said through the years she has enjoyed everything about the job, remarking, "It's a lot of different duties one does." As long as the county population remains under 10,000 residents, the roles of county and district clerk remain combined. Payares has been the clerk and custodian of all records for both district courts and the commissioner's court. For the district, she coordinates the jury panel selection process, manages the court registry funds, and oversees court records, filing fees, and litigation funds. As county clerk, she maintains bonds, deeds, birth and death certificates, assumed names and livestock brands, and she issues marriage licenses. Payares thanked the deputies she has worked with over the years and said she would miss the courthouse family the most. She also thanked her constituents for supporting her through the years. In retirement, she says she is looking forward to spending more time with her husband and grandchildren, traveling, and having more time to care for her mother. Payares wrote in a farewell letter to the Presidio County community, "It was an amazing ride, but now it's time for me to let go of the reins and allow someone else to come in and take them."
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 6th. Voters give nod to Steen in mayoral race. Melius wins re-election bid for District 7 seat. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Adam Steen and Quint Melius were the winners in the Monahans mayoral and the MWP ISD School Trustee District 7 elections that ended on Saturday. Elections results, as stated in this story, are unofficial until the canvassing has been completed and certified by the respective entities. In what many may consider an upset, challenger Steen topped incumbent Monahans Mayor David Cutberth, who held the position for the past 28 years. Melius, incumbent District 7 trustee for the Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD, was successful in his bid for re-election against challenger Rebecca Kynes. In the mayoral race, Steen collected a total of 447 votes, 226 in early voting, and 221 on the May 1st election day. Cutberth garnered 423 votes, 232 in early voting, and 191 on Saturday, for a total of 423 votes. With 4,088 eligible voters in Monahans, a total of 870 votes were cast, or 21.2%. Votes will be canvassed at the next meeting of the Monahans City Council on May 11th, and Steen will be given the oath of office during the May 25th meeting, assuming there are no changes after the canvass. Cutberth said he will not ask for a recount. Both meetings are set for 3 p.m. Steen said, quote, "Thanks to everyone that turned out to vote, regardless of who they voted for, I am so anxious to helping all of the residents of Monahans and excited to move the city forward," end quote. Cutberth said, quote, "I am happy for the people that turned out and voted for me. From speaking with people, A lot of my voters were here when we started 28 years ago. We are not leaving any issues with the city. Things are in good shape. I wish Adam Steen the best of luck." End quote. He is undecided if he will run for mayor in 2023, but did not rule out the possibility. For the trustee election, Melius took 90 votes in early voting and 42 on May 1st for a total vote count of 132 votes. Kynes gathered 32 votes in early voting and 25 on Election Day for a total of 57 votes. With 1,081 registered voters in MWP ISD District 7, the 189 votes cast represent 17.5% of the voters. Quote, "I'm humbled by the overwhelming support," Melia said. In discussing plans for moving forward with the district, he said, quote, "The highest priority is to work to not have any of our schools on an improvement plan and for our students to excel on STAR tests. I'm really excited to continue the work," end quote. In discussing the loss, Kynes said, quote, "I am thankful for everyone that supported me in this race. Even though I was not successful in my campaign, I plan to stay involved in encouraging other parents to work at holding our district accountable for providing a safe and productive learning environment for the students and staff. I am still optimistic our district will become more transparent and become allies of parents, students, and staff, and we can all work together for the growth of our district." End quote. The trustees will meet at 6 p.m. on May 5th to canvass the votes. Melius will then be given the oath of office at the school board meeting on May 17th at 6:30 p.m., assuming there are no issues with the canvass. Reeves County Sheriff Deputy faces criminal misconduct charges. The story was written by Rosie Flores. The Reeves County Sheriff's Department arrested one of its own deputies last week. On April 20th, the Reeves County Sheriff's Office received a complaint against Deputy Gregory Arellano of misconduct while on official duty. According to a press release by the department, quote, "An internal criminal investigation was then conducted by Reeves County Sheriff's Office Criminal Investigation Division, and as a result of the investigation, it was discovered that Deputy Arellano committed the offense of official oppression, a violation of the Texas Penal Code, a Class A misdemeanor, by conducting a premeditated traffic stop as an excuse to threaten a citizen due to personal issues." Quote, "Deputy Arellano has been terminated from Reeves County Sheriff's Office, and his criminal case was taken to the district grand jury. The grand jury indicted Deputy Arellano, and he was booked into Reeves County Jail, where he posted a $10,000 bond. Quote, "If convicted, Arellano may be punished by a fine of not to exceed $4,000, confinement in jail for a term not to exceed 1 year, or both the fine and confinement. In addition, he faces losing his peace officer license and will be unable to become a peace officer anywhere in the state of Texas for life." End quote. Arellano had been employed with the Sheriff's Department since June 2020. Since the case is still pending, names of those involved and the details of the incident were not released by the Sheriff's Office. Quote, "Reeves County Sheriff's Office strives to maintain a professional agency in which our community can feel safe and be proud to have. We also strive to keep all of our staff properly trained, and we will not tolerate any type of misconduct or corruption at any level of our office," said Reeves County Sheriff Arturo Granado. Correa arrested for assault 6 days after Swanson Hansen probation for assault. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahans Police Department officers arrested Jesse Correa, age 24, of 503 North Allen, for assaulting his partner 6 days after the 143rd Judicial District Judge Mike Swenson handed him 10 years confinement in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice, probated for 5 years for the same charge. According to MPD Captain Christopher Quintana, quote, on April 26th, officers were dispatched to the police station in reference to a female victim, Judith Lara, who wanted to press charges on Correa for striking her in the face, end quote. The incident happened at 309 South Gale, according to records. A search was conducted in which methamphetamine was located on Correa's person. He was subsequently arrested and charged with possession of controlled substance greater than 4 grams, less than 200 grams, a second-degree felony, and continuous violence against the family, a third-degree felony, for assaulting the same female victim more than once. Bond was set at $15,000 on the possession charge and $10,000 on the assault charge. This is the second time Correa has failed to meet the terms of the deferred adjudication agreement. Correa remains in custody in lieu of posting the bond. Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department experiences equipment damage in recent fires. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. With the dry weather and unseasonably warm weather, Monahan's Volunteer Fire Department has been busy trying to keep the fires, mostly grass and brush fires in not only Monahan's, but other areas of the county as well. MVFD is frequently called in to help out with the smaller fire departments in Wickett and Piute and Grand Falls, and even as far as Barstow. But the recent rains did give the department a bit of a reprieve. Quote, we haven't had any fires over the last several days, MVFD Chief Randy Crabtree said. But with hotter weather coming, we could still use a lot more rain, end quote. According to Samantha Zuber at the National Weather Service office in Midland, estimates of rainfall between April 28th to 30th was between 3/4 and 1 inch of rain, with the heaviest on April 29th. Although a brief reprieve from both the heat with temperatures in the 70s on Tuesday, the 10-day forecast calls for high temperatures from the high 80s to high 90s. While MVFD remains busy in containing fires, the equipment takes a beating as well, largely due to the rough terrain of many of the rural brush fires. Quote, we had a brush truck that lost a transmission and driveline in a fire north of Monahan's. We are still trying to determine if it is worth repairing or if it is even worth it, as it is one of our older vehicles, end quote. The brush trucks used by the department are typically heavy-duty surplus military vehicles designed for rough terrain. The trucks transport water and other tools needed for fighting brush fires. The department is, for the most part, self-sufficient when it comes to routine maintenance and repairs that helps keep costs down. Quote, we have a lot of talented guys that are great at taking care of the vehicles, Crabtree said. Damage to tires is also quite common in the rough terrain in rural areas of the county. Tires can run as high as $400 to $600 each on some of the larger vehicles. Quote, we had several spares, but we are starting to use those up, Crabtree said. We have gone through 6 tires in the last 3 to 4 weeks, end quote. MVFD receives funding from Ward County for firefighting in rural areas of the county and Monahan's for fires within the city limits, but at the rate of damage to vehicles and the loss of tires, funds for the replacement parts and equipment could become a problem. If anyone wishes to make a donation to MVFD, Crabtree can be contacted at area code 432-425-6704. Crabtree said one of the best things to help MVFD is for residents to keep their grass cut, trash picked up, and brush trimmed. 100 Monahan's families to be gifted a new computer. CompuDopt, a national nonprofit, is bringing their computer lottery to the Monahan's community. With thanks to Callan Petroleum, 100 free computers will be distributed to families without access to a device at home and with a child in kindergarten through 12th grade. Families simply need to register at www.compudopt.org/Permian Basin by clicking the computer lottery button. Once registered, if you are selected, you will receive a text message from CompuDopt inviting you to pick up your device at their computer drive-thru. Funded by Callan Petroleum, the computers are given to families free of charge, include 2 years of free tech support, and CompuDopt also provides information on free and low-cost internet options that match family-specific needs. While 100 families will be served at this distribution, CompuDopt has distributed over 6,000 computers across their sites nationally to students without access to a device at home over the past 4 months. Quote, "This is a solvable problem, and it is critical that we continue to invest in initiatives that support giving students and families the tools they need to access additional resources," said Megan Steckley, CEO for CompuDopt. Continuing the quote, "Partnerships like this demonstrate how solvable this issue really is for the community," end quote. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Monahan's News on Thursday, May 6th. Monica Anaya, age 91, of Monahan's, passed away on May 3rd at her home in Monahan's. Monica Anaya was born in Lorain to Miguel and Simona Reyes on May 4th, 1929. Monica was married and preceded by death to Jose R. Anaya and was a longtime resident of Monahan's for over 70 years. Monica is preceded in death by her husband of 60 years, Jose R. Anaya, sisters Juanita Lopez, Cruz Reyes, and Clara Ponce, brothers Mike Reyes, Frank Reyes, Antonio Reyes, and Felipe Reyes. She is survived by her son, Emilio Anaya of Odessa, her daughter Lola Mendoza and Adelita Ornelas of Monahan's, and son Joe Anaya of Flower Mound, brothers Placido Reyes and Vidal Reyes of Monahan's, as well as 13 grandchildren, 35 great-grandchildren, and 30 great-great-grandchildren. Visitation was held Wednesday, May 5th at Harkey Funeral Home. Rosary was held at St. John Evangelist Catholic Church. Mass was held on Thursday, May 6th at St. John Evangelist Catholic Church. Burial followed at Monahan's Memorial Cemetery. Visit our website, harkeyfunerals.com, to sign the guest book or to leave a personal note for the family. Funeral arrangements were under the care of Harkey Funeral Home. Gerald Edwin Bopel, 80-year-old Okama, Oklahoma resident, passed away on May 1st in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He was born October 29, 1940, in Great Bend, Kansas, to parents Edward and Dorothy June Bopel. He was a high school graduate. He married Merle Dean Carpenter on February 2, 1963, in Ellenwood, Kansas. Gerald worked at Halliburton Energy Institute as an oil field instructor for 30 years. He is survived by his wife of 58 years, Merle Bopel, his son, George Bopel, of Conroe, daughter Jamie Fabian and Gary Morse of Bowlegs, Oklahoma, brothers Fred and Velma Bopel of North Richland Hills, and Dennis and Virginia Bopel of Florida, 6 grandchildren, 6 great-grandchildren, and 1 great-great-grandchild. He was preceded in death by his parents, his twin brother Harold, and his sister Jeanette. The family is planning a celebration of life service at a later date.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.